Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we've just heard about long-term access. I'm going to speak about short-term access, and indeed about this hot topic for many of us, which is open access to scholarly works at large. My main point, again, focusing on the conclusion right away, is that we need to be very innovative to provide maximal access to scientific information, because basically scientific information is at the center of any kind of scholarly work. As soon as the scientist starts exploring new territories, he needs to know what the others have done, what kind of experiments have done, what kind of data they've been generating. They need also to, while making discoveries, to be able to disseminate their results. They need to communicate to others, and as we heard, also to the wide public at times. And most of the time, this dissemination goes through a kind of short haul, which is that of peer reviewing as we know it now. Finally, we should not forget that science, in its beauty, is based on some kind of less nice work, preparing grants, preparing reports about assessment, and actually basically making the research teams work. To this purpose, the scientists need, again, to manipulate scientific information, to gather evidence that they've done a good work before and that they will be able to do some good work afterwards. So scientific information, now taken from the point of view of an institution, me as representative of INRIA, for instance, in France, is about providing the researcher with the means to do this job, basically. Providing access to publication, traditionally through subscriptions, giving the means to record, disseminate his or her activity. We know about journals, but we want probably to do more. We already heard about repositories. And also allowing him to manage is information. So when we speak about open access, it may be at the end of the day the researcher's decision to disseminate some results to a colleague, to a community, or to a wider community, the public, when he wants that. And it covers more than publications as we know them. We know about laboratory notes. They may be essential to be able to reproduce an experiment. In the human sciences, as we will hear, there's the notion of primary source, which has to be made widely known so that people can compare the kind of analysis we make on them. And finally, all those databases in whatever kind of formats, not always based on standards, which have to be retrieved, understood, and further used. There are a few politically correct challenges there. Of course, we all know about the journal crisis and the high cost of traditional scholarly publishing. We need to do with it. We need to accommodate, like we heard, with the new technologies popping in. A lot of the things we do are born digital in many of the domains, also in the humanities, and we do not rely systematically on paper activities. Finally, it's important to get a comprehensive view on the researcher's production. It's not just writing papers, it's a whole process dealing with an initial idea down to the dissemination of all the results that this idea has led to at the end of the day. Going back to the, I would say, traditional publication field, when we speak about a publication, it covers a whole range of activities from the point of view of the researcher, from the point of view of the institution, but also from the point of view of third parties like publishers intervening in there. You need to write your paper, you need to identify yourself as the owner, for instance, to fight against plagiarism of the corresponding paper. You need to be certified by the peers, and you need to disseminate, and finally, you need to make sure that what you're doing will be available in the long term. When we speak about open access, it has to do with dissemination. How do we just open the windows and let the thing go? I'll start with the theoretical point of view on open access and then give a kind of French touch on that by somehow presenting the wide range of French policies we have in this respect. The theory came from here, the Berlin Declaration. I don't know whether Jürgen Renn is there, but he was seminal in putting this initiative together, where we have a lot of keywords there. We speak about free, irrevocable, worldwide right of access to and a license to copy, use, distribute, transmit, and display the work publicly and to make and distribute derivative works in any digital medium for any responsible purpose. It's basically doing anything with the works that have been produced by our science at large. That's very nice. It's wide open. You would like to apply and some of us sign it immediately. But when it boils down to the current situation, the current landscape in open access, you're basically either green or gold. So for those of you who do not know this terminology, we speak of green open access when we say, well, the author himself or herself provides access to his or her scholarly papers. From the point of view of the institution, it means putting together a repository infrastructure so that this is made feasible. And we speak of a gold open access when we say the publishing locus, for instance, the journal, will make the corresponding paper freely available to the wide community at the time of publication, for instance. This is gold open access. The current implementation, for instance, from the commercial publishing environment is to say, well, let's have the author pay for its publication. So you pay to make sure that your paper will be freely available online. There are some issues there, of course. It's strongly anchored on the traditional journal system, whereas we know that the situation evolves. There are many ways, as we shall see, to publish results. We're not that close to the Berlin principles. A lot of the keywords, the nice keywords we've seen, are now being reduced. How far can we actually access and reuse under this condition? What are the licensing schemes that come with those deposits? There's nothing about data when we speak about green or gold open access. It's about journal. How do we make a global picture where data fits in? So basically, are there other colors or other shades of green and gold? This we could see perhaps by looking at the current French policy. As some of you may know, it's nearly impossible to speak about the French policy on open access without mentioning this HAL. Nothing to do with a famous movie. It's Hyper Archive en Ligne. It's a national publication repository which started in 2001, initially intended to be a mirror to archive, and which had had over the years a quick expansion to all disciplines, and also which has been taken up by most of the institutions, research and higher education institutions in France. So now it's 220,000 text, full text documents in there, and around 3,000 papers every month. The point about the HAL publication repository is that it is somehow double-sided. From the point of view of the researcher, it provides a direct channel of dissemination for his papers. Many of my colleagues, myself, are just putting drafts online to make sure that the colleagues can react and give feedback. And at the end of the day, when a publication has been accepted, it can also be there as a dissemination channel for my favorite version, I would say. It's also, from the point of view of an institution, a memory of the research results, because in there we worked over the years to make sure of the metadata quality, to make sure that the researcher appears with his affiliations. And in France, let me tell you that the affiliation schemes can be quite complex. It's also a way to allow the researchers, the teams, or the institutions to provide accurate reports on what they're doing. Some institutions, some laboratories are using HAL as a reporting tool, a practical reporting tool. And basically, because you may ask yourselves, and the peer review in there, somehow we don't care, it comes as a complement to the peer review system. It's really about dissemination. So HAL has been so famous over the years that it has been a major stone in the national policy about open access, where in January 2013, where we organized a major event around open access in France, our Minister de l'Enseignement Supérieur et de la Recherche, Geneviève Jourasco, said, "L'information scientifique est un bien commun qui doit être disponible pour tous." You don't know French necessarily. Scientific information is a public good that must be available to all. In this respect, we decided to put together an open access plan in coherence with Horizon 2020, combining green open access as a priority, deposit in publication archives, gold open access to contemplate new ways of putting together journal infrastructure, and other forms of open access, as we shall see. This is organized in France by the major consortium of all research institutions and higher education institutions, which is called the Bibliothèque Scientifique Numérique, which covers all aspects of scientific information in France, which allows us to actually discuss the issues and move forward as quickly as we can. At a lower level, I would say, in April, on the 2nd of April, we actually signed, we being 25 national organizations in France, a memorandum of understanding whereby we take our central platform for disseminating publication in France. Finally, let me mention the specific policy of INRIA. So some of us, some as institutions, decided to go even beyond. So for instance, INRIA published in January 2013 an open access policy which corresponds to a deposit mandate. That is, only the publications in HAL will be taken into account at the end of the year for reporting and for assessment. We also have a what I call a cautious gold strategy. That is, we want to consider the benefits of an author pay model, but we want to make sure that it remains within our budget and that this is done at the conditions we express as scientists. Finally, which is really the main issue in defining our future policy in open access, is to know whether there are some other publication models, other ways of disseminating information, somehow to go beyond the green and gold divide. I'm turning to several people in the room who know that already. If you go to the humanities now, the young scholars are not, and maybe the not so young scholars actually blog their results. That is, as they go through the process of making discoveries, on working on sources, and identifying the new concepts, they create blogs on such a platform, hypothèse.org, which is not any kind of blog, but as a matter of fact, a scholarly blog which has an editorial committee in the background. Let me mention that something like Hypothèse, which is a French platform, now goes DE. It has 47 scholarly blogs in German, in the German language, with the support of the Max Weber Stiftung and the Institut Historique Allemand. I can mention also, turning to Peter Dorn, the Narcisse environment, which goes in the direction and putting together publications and data in the same environment. So when you publish something on Narcisse, you can also put data set in combination. Finally, let me mention something important, new business models. I'm referring here to the Open Edition platform, so this is another initiative coming from France, an initiative supported by three universities, the CNRS and the EHESS, whereby the idea is to make neither the author nor the reader pays in just a system, but to offer a so-called freemium scheme. That is, you can get the HTML freely online, you don't have to pay, no one has to pay, and then the libraries which want additional services, cataloging services, to have the EPUB available, for instance, to actually read that on your iPad, can pay an extra fee and actually offer that, for instance, to the students or the scholars in the university. Finally, even more experimental, for those of you who have seen this news in Nature in January, we want to create epi-journals. Basically, you take a publication repository infrastructure, you let the user, a researcher, upload one of his paper, and then click on a button which is making the paper being sent to an editorial committee. If the editorial committee agrees with the quality of the paper, you get stamped in a way, and it's like a mini journal being organized on top of a publication repository infrastructure. So we go step by step to a situation where we've got the possibility to have new visions in a way. We can imagine, and it's not science fiction, you already have virtual astronomers which do not see a telescope in their life, whereby a scholar plays with an environment of information. He identifies it himself or herself, that comes with all his affiliations automatically. He's got research folders where he can gather notes, data, and so on. And then he decides on which openness he will associate to these research folders. Basically, it says, well, I've gathered enough enough evidence concerning a new discovery, I would like to have two or three colleagues observe that, basically. Or this is set, I'm sending that, like in the AP Science project, to an editorial committee. Or at the end he says, well, I'm just happy with my results, push and make it widely open at the end of the day. In this context, certification comes in many ways. Of course, you've got the traditional editorial committee, but basically you can also have the comments from the community at large, which is basically what we want as scientists at the end of the day. So it's quite a change that we've got in front of us. Looks a little bit like science fiction, but basically what we know is that we need to experiment. There's no one single scheme to implement open access. Thank you.